At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
I'm Ashley.
And I'm Brooke.
And you're here with us on a Teachers Who Talk Crime
podcast.
And I just want to say one thing. Happy Valentine's Day. Every day the 14th. I don't think y'all heard me. I just want to say Happy Valentine's Day. Every
day the 14th. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
Happy V-Day.
Yes. Hug those people you love and just tell them you love them.
Send the flowers. Man, did you order the flowers?
You know, I don't really like flowers.
I don't either, actually. James, my fiance, really likes flowers. He likes to arrange flowers. We always have a fresh bouquet in our home.
Oh, That is really sweet.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I just saw the most recent episode of Abbott Elementary.
Yeah.
And they had the Lego flowers.
That's cute. Hey, while I'm here, can we start that season over so I can actually get on board with this?
We in like season two.
Can I start from the beginning with you tonight?
Okay.
You don't mind?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
Like, I just hear you talk about the show and I really want to watch it.
It's literally the best show ever.
Yeah.
I also, if anyone listening happens to be like a producer for Abbott Elementary, I would love to be on the next season. Just
I think I vote this.
Just putting it out there because I need an alternative career.
But you could also bring real life scenarios to the show.
100%. Like half the things that happen on the show, I'm like, I'm sorry. Were you like following me around?
Were you a fly? I didn't consent to this.
I'm sorry. You're taking my ideas and I'm not getting paid for them.
Yeah.
So run my checks. Thank you.
I'm excited to watch this.
It's so good. I love it so much. And it's based in Philly. So they're like Philly things. And it's like things like that people, you don't know. So it's like.
So how about that? A Super Bowl that would have already taken place when this comes out.
I wonder if Rihanna did that. Permian. I don't even know if those are the words, honestly.
I have no idea. But we just had this whole conversation about that's new Rihanna. And I literally looked over and I was like, I missed the sex with me. So amazing.
Period. Period.
Yeah, that's my Rihanna. Ashley thinks this is not Rihanna's comeback. She thinks this is her like, peace out, guys. I did my big shebang and now I am out.
This is absolutely her farewell tour. I don't think she's going to do music anymore.
I think it's her comeback.
I think she's going to be done. I think she's going to focus on her new baby.
And her relationship.
Her relationship. The Fenty. The Savage Fenty. Her lingerie line. Here's the thing. Rihanna don't have to sing another day in her life. Okay? Sis is good.
She's very good. Her Fenty line alone, I think they... I don't even want to even guess the number. They said it not too long ago and they were like, she's good.
100%.
Mm-hmm. Do you wear Fenty?
I wear their foundation and their concealer.
I thought you did. I think I remember you telling me that.
Yes, I do.
Fenty, if you would like to sponsor Teachers Who Talk Crime
podcast, please help us because we're poor.
I do want to try her stuff. I've heard really good things about it.
Oh, I have her gloss bomb too.
I'm getting more into gloss. But the problem is because of the size of my lips, I get butthole lip. And we've talked about this before.
I'm sorry, what?
I get butthole lip. Because I get the gook that goes like around your lips and it looks like a butthole. You never heard of butthole lip?
I've never heard of butthole lip.
Well, let me shout out to Colleen Harrison because she's the one that taught me about butthole lip. Because she straight up looked at me one day. She's like, you got butthole lip.
See, when I think of butthole lip, I think of like when an adult like yells at a child, but they lift be like, get off from you, like it looked like a butthole.
Right.
Like that's what I think a butthole lip is. Not like
the gook from the lip gloss. No, that's butthole lip.
But it's.
So I have to wear a matte lipstick so that it doesn't move and gunk up. But I want to be that glossy girl. Like I want to be that girl.
Okay. Well, if anyone knows how to combat butthole lip, please.
Please let your girl know.
Let us know. So, yeah.
Yeah. Because it's a thing.
Okay.
Now everybody going to be looking in the mirror every day. Like, I got butthole lip.
BHL.
Hashtag BHL.
Hashtag BHL. Yeah. I'm crying. Yeah.
Yeah. But it is Valentine's Day and we are together. We're recording this in Ashley's beautiful home.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're so welcome. I had the most interesting flight of my entire life. Yeah. I think I now know the Eagles cheer back and front, up and down, sideways. And
what's that? The Fly Eagles Fly one?
Yep.
Yeah.
I know it now because they did it on my flight the whole way here. Mm. Yeah. But it's okay.
And you know what's crazy? It's probably going to be happening on your way back.
Oh, yeah. Because you're leaving on Super Bowl
Sunday. Well, I don't, what time is your flight?
It's at 5. What time's the game?
I'm sure. I don't know. I'm watching the Rihanna concert. That's the only thing I'm watching.
I like the commercials.
I don't even have cable, so I don't even know how this is going to happen.
Yeah.
Who
going to give me their login?
Who going to let me see?
The YouTube TV.
Let me see something.
YouTube TV is very expensive.
You know...
It's almost like having cable. Like, you got rid of cable to save money, and then you turn around and you get YouTube TV, and you're basically paying the same price. Mm. And Netflix out here scamming us with our logins, and we can't share those no more.
Oh, my God. Like, why would you do that? Mm-hmm. I mean, it hasn't started yet.
No, but...
Here's the thing. Y'all already making so much goddamn money.
Yep.
Y'all are just being greedy at mm-hmm. this point. So, Netflix... If you are listening, shame on you.
Yeah.
Because the way my family does it is each of us pays for a different, like, subscriber.
I like that.
Like, so my mom paid for Netflix. I pay for Hulu. My dad plays for Disney Plus. Ooh, I play for Paramount Plus, too. And my sister paid for Peacock. So we got, you know,
an array of things.
We got a pick of the litter. And now you're going to tell me, you know what? Netflix, mark my words. You pull this shit. You hear my... You pull this shit, I'm done with you.
A lot of people are saying that.
I'm gonna be done.
A lot of people are saying that they're like gonna just off their subscription to Netflix.
Because I'm gonna be done.
They're gonna like protest it and like, well, if you're gonna do this, then we're not gonna use you.
100%. I'm not. What sense does it make if we're all using the same password? And I could see, you know, like, this is my family. I mean, granted, they can't be like, oh, is that your family? Like, I know they can't look like that, but like, y'all mofos are making mad money already.
Yeah, they are. I mean, Whitney uses my Netflix, and it's because I logged in one time at her house, and I didn't really care. My sister uses my Netflix, and then we use my Netflix at home. Mm-hmm. And I don't, like, understand why. That's three people. They're not hurting anybody.
I mean, some people might have, like, Tom, Dick, and Harry on and you know, a laundry list. I don't think there's a limit of how many things you can have.
Well, you have but to have a certain number of devices, you have to pay a little extra. Well, if I pay the little extra, let me have as many devices as I want.
Right? And then how are you going to know? Like, it's like, oh, your IP address. Like,
I can't only watch Netflix at my home.
Like, how about you worry about, like,
yeah.
combating the real issues in America?
Yeah.
How about that?
I will say, I did scam a boy that I went on a date with. Like, right when Disney Plus came out, he and I went on a date. And the date consisted of me going to buy my first TV because I lived without a TV for a very long time. And he logged into Disney Plus and I never logged out. And I still have it. Sorry. And I don't even remember his name.
Cool. Thanks, whatever your name is.
Thank you for your Disney Plus. I watched Hocus Pocus 2 on that. Mm. And it was good.
I got to watch the Wakanda Forever because it's now on there.
I need to watch that as well. But I would like to go back and watch Wakanda, the Black Panther, like the first
Black
one,
Panther.
And yeah. then watch and it Wakanda and Forever. Like make it a whole series.
Oh, like make it a like.
Because like, although I remember it and I remember Michael B. Jordan like stealing my heart that day. Mm-hmm. I don't remember all the details.
I know everybody was fiending for Michael B. Jordan. I don't remember what that other man's name was. That big boy.
Oh, the one that lived in the mountains and wore the polar bears and stuff?
That man was fine.
Yep.
He was a big, strong man.
Yeah.
Chow.
They didn't give him much spotlight.
Mm-mm, but I heard he in that second one, and I'm trying to see all the spotlights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm excited.
Yeah.
All righty.
It'll be a good time. Okay, so.
Look at us. We're right at our 10-minute mark.
Yes, we are. So we're going to get into our Estudiante Estrella.
Yeah.
So our Estudiante Estrella is Art is Life 3.
Art is Life.
And I already know who this is because this is my good friend, Christine. So shout out to you, Christine. Beep, 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 beep,
beep. Hello, Christine.
Hey, girl. And her review says, love listening. And clearly it's 5 stars.
Beer, 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 beer. I don't know how many that was.
I think that was 6, but it's okay. I wasn't really counting, you know. You just do what you feel.
Yeah.
Her comment reads, you both make me laugh and make me want to comment on so many things. I wish it was live so we can chat and comment on some things. I've been a fan since day numero uno. Still am. You both have come so far. Biggie said it best. Sky's the limit. Can't wait to hear more. Period. Period.
Oh, I like that review.
I like that. Yes, Christine, a.k.a. Art is Life 3. Well, girl, I thank you so much for your review. This gold star's for you. Bing.
Yeah. That was a good review. Sky is the limit. This is our year. We're going to do some things.
Yeah. Like right now we're literally recording this episode video wise and
I hate that our first YouTube video we look like shiitake mushrooms. But here we are, and I mean, how more real can you get? I got a big old thing right here on my face. I don't have makeup on. I have my teeth in. My hair hasn't been washed, and I really don't actually know.
Yeah, and I'm just, you know, here.
We're here.
Yeah.
So this is the real us, and then we'll put on the glam. I mean, well, not glam, but like we could do something with ourselves.
Maybe I'll change my shirt. This might be what you get, and y'all just gonna have to be okay with that.
Yeah, you like us for what's on the inside.
You know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else? Amazon.
Oh, yeah. We've made $7 so far on our storefront.
We appreciate that you liking our things. I have made a very large order on Amazon that I will be showing you guys because I bought some things that I was influenced to buy by other influencers.
Solid, solid.
That's kind of the name of the game, I guess.
Yeah.
And I'll show you all what I get when they arrive.
Okay.
I did already. Yeah. Did I show everyone the books I got? I jumped on the Colleen Hoover bandwagon.
Who that?
It's the author that went viral on TikTok.
A viral for what?
Our books.
Are they sex books?
I think, I don't, well, there is sex.
Like, are they the erotic books?
No, they're love stories.
Oh.
Well, I'm going to jump on the bandwagon. And I will link them, though. But I will let y'all guys know. I brought one with me on the flight. So I will be reading that on the way back. And, yeah, I thought I posted it. But I think I posted it on my own page. Because I get our accounts very confused sometimes. And I forget what account I'm logged into.
Mm.
I've made that mistake a lot.
Mm.
But I will post those because that's really cool. And I like to read. And I'm trying to be better about that because I need to do that.
Okay. I liked it.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So we'll just jump right into our Valentine's case.
Yup.
Sit down. Shut up. The murder is about to begin.
Ahora on Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Okay, so today we are going to do what they call the Valentine's murders. Mm. It's a cold case, so that means this is our first like unsolved case, I think.
Ooh, dun dun dun.
Like we have some cases that haven't gone to trial yet, but like we know who the perpetrator is.
Mm.
This case, we have no perpetrator.
No perpetrators.
Mm-mm. So the trigger warnings today are abduction, unsolved cases, and strangulation.
Okay.
Over half a century ago, a young couple, Jesse Allen McBain and Patricia Ann Mann, were brutally murdered in a ritualistic manner near Orange Durham County lines. Although it has been nearly 47 years since this tragedy took place, no one has yet to be charged in their murder. So here's what we do know. A young couple in Durham, North Carolina, were abducted, tortured, and ultimately murdered around Valentine's Day in 1971.
Durham?
Durham? Durham?
Durham.
Durham. Durham.
Durham.
Durham.
Durham.
Yeah.
Not Durham. Durham.
Durham.
Okay.
All right.
Durham.
Okay. Just sounds so weird.
Yeah, it does.
That's a weird town name. Sorry. So, a young couple in Durham, North Carolina, were abducted, tortured, and ultimately murdered around Valentine's Day in 1971. And unfortunately, Ashley, this may be our first case without a positive ending. Because, you know, normally we try to bring light at the end of the case.
Yeah.
You know, we try to give a positive spin. And unfortunately, we won't have that today because this has been a case that no one's actually been charged in their murder. And it is dubbed the Valentine's Day murders because although it didn't happen on February 14th, it did happen 2 days before February 14th, and it involves a Valentine's dance.
A dance?
Yeah.
Oh. Dance. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Just immediately. I'm sorry.
So Jesse McBain was a 19-year-old freshman who attended North Carolina State University. He was 6'2", very good-looking, and popular among his peers. He was known as an athlete, and he was known to be very strong in just a general sense.
Okay.
He was even voted most likely to succeed among his high school classmates. Jesse was in a happy, loving relationship with his high school sweetheart, 20-year-old Patricia Mann. They were newly engaged. Well, actually, they had asked Jesse's parents if they could have their blessing for when Patricia graduated. So Patricia was a year older than Jesse, mm-hmm. and they had asked for his parents' blessings. Like, when I graduate, can I marry Patricia?
Aww.
And they had just given their blessings. So without a formal engagement, they were technically engaged.
Okay, that's cute.
Mm-hmm.
That's cute.
So they literally had the world to look forward to. And Patricia Mann was a nursing student who was studying at Watts College in Durham on an and this was like a prestigious nursing college. It was the foundation of like where medicine was like starting to make a lot of progress.
Oh.
Now, Patricia originally did not want to be a nurse, and she grew up with a cousin, Carolyn. I want to say her name was Carolyn. Yeah, because the detective called her Carol, and they had to like make some notes of that.
Mm-hmm.
So Carolyn and Patricia, they call her Pat, so you might hear me refer to Patricia as Pat. But they would often play war with their male cousins, and they would pretend that the basement was the hospital, right? Because this is the 70s, mm-hmm. and this is like Vietnam War and all that stuff. And so their cousins would pretend to get hurt in war, and they would bring down to the basement, and the girls would pretend to be nurses. Well, Pat wanted to actually be a teacher, and she had this whole goal of being a teacher where Carolyn wanted to be a nurse.
Okay.
But because the two were inseparable and they were first cousins and they like literally were best friends, Pat didn't want to be separated from Carolyn. So they both applied to nursing schools. And unfortunately, Carolyn did not get into Watts College, but Pat did. And Carolyn said that she tried to, you know, really encourage Pat to go because Pat was like, well, I don't want to do this without you. I don't want to be separated from you. You're my best friend. And Carolyn ultimately like encouraged her to not give up and to go and do this.
Okay.
Because she was really smart. So on February 12th, 1971, Jesse took Patricia to a Valentine's dance at Watts Hospital. This was for the students to just kind of let loose and have a good night.
Okay.
It was a cold and rainy night, and Jesse had just left his parents' home in northern Chatham County to where Patricia Mann lived in Durham. Captain Tim Horn, who you will hear me talk about a lot in this case, said the following. Jesse was not supposed to have the car that night. He and his brother shared the car, and it wasn't his night. He made a deal with his brother and mother, and they traded days. They worked it out. So at last minute, Jesse gets the car, and he surprised Pat at her dorm that night. And to Pat's surprise, Jesse was ready for the dance. He was ready to socialize. So I can't remember the girl's name. She wasn't Pat's roommate, but she lived in the dorms. And they were like the only two girls that had not gone home that weekend.
Okay.
And so they were just kind of like chit-chatting in their rooms, and the buzzer thing went off. Granted, this is the 70s. I don't know how you got buzzed up in the 70s. But someone informed Pat that she had a visitor. Mm-hmm. And she was very caught off guard because Jesse was not supposed to come up there.
Mm-hmm.
So he basically surprised her. And off the two went to the dance.
Okay.
The police suspect that, being the young couple they are, they did leave the dance at 11:30 p.m. And this was proven through witnesses and testimonies.
Mm-hmm.
And They also saw where Jesse had signed out of Patricia's dorm, so they had to keep a log. Now, this college was very, very strict. They had very strict curfews. They had dorm moms that made sure they were in their room. They had 2 hours every single night of study hours. They could not even leave their room to go to the bathroom or they would be reprimanded. It was
so like you got a pee-pee on yourself?
It was a forced study time.
Like, first of all, here's the thing. I like all those like security measures and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But what you're not going to do is force me to study.
Yeah.
That's what you're not going to do.
Because I might sit there and stare at the wall. Mm-mm. I will study when I'm ready to study.
That's not going to happen. No, thank you.
Yeah. So this is a very strict, like her and I'm going to call the girl Sarah. I don't think that that's her name. It might be Sarah, Sally, something like that.
Okay.
They didn't like Sally or Sarah. They spoke about this incident where like not incident, but they said that they never actually got to go out on the town in Durham because they were stuck in this hospital. And they were grateful for the opportunity to become these amazing nurses because this was such a prestigious school. Mm-hmm. But they remember one time they were walking, they went for a walk, and they were walking along the lines of the campus. And she said that she just had this overwhelming feeling like they were like rebelling because they went for a walk.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Oh my God.
So it's really, I mean, you know. So the security measures of the dorm come into play here because they can see where Jesse signed out of Patricia's dorm. The dorm typically had a curfew, but it had extended this curfew from 12 a.m. to 1 a.m.
Ooh.
I know, a whole extra hour.
Let loose.
And this was to accommodate the Valentine's dance that was taking place. The couple went to a secluded area, a.k.a. parking.
Ooh.
Because, you know, that was all the rage back then. Ooh. To go parking.
Yep. Pop that trunk, sit in it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Is that what they did in the 70s?
I think so. Didn't they do things like that? They had a little blanket back there or whatever. Ooh. You know, make it all romantic. Mm-hmm.
And they went to this place called Wayside Place, a.k.a. Lover's Lane.
There are so many Lover's Lane.
Yes. And this was a popular makeout spot among the young adults, and everyone knew about it. They even said, when I was researching this, that each couple like had like a spot that wasn't like, you obviously can't put your name on a spot, but everyone knew that was your spot. Like, don't go make out in my spot.
Give me a break. See, if I was alive back then, I would be like, I made out in your spot, your spot, your spot. These my spots, okay?
I mark my territory everywhere.
Well, thank you.
So, the whole concept of like a lover's lane is like mind blowing. Now, granted, this is the 70s, but like you have Bill and Jill right next to you making out in their spot, and then you got Sally and Tom back on the other side making out in their spot, and everyone's just making out in spots.
That's weird.
It's the 70s. I don't know. They were all like peace, love.
Ew, no.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be looking. Hey, you getting a good session? Disgusting.
Oh, it's so funny.
Cringy.
Mm. So this area, Wayside Place, a.k.a. Lover's Lane, is now a neighborhood in like modern times. But at the time, developers had cut numerous like cul-de-sacs. And that's kind of where the couples would park. So they weren't like parking lots and it wasn't like parking spots. They were at dead end roads where neighborhoods were being developed.
Okay.
And Pat's roommate knew where the couple had planned to go. And it was the first indication later of what might have happened to them.
Okay.
So that same night around 1:10 a.m., because like I said, this college is very strict. And like at 1 o'clock, the house dorm mother, whatever you want to call her, she began to do her rounds.
Okay.
Because that's her job.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was 1:10 a.m. And she goes in and she asks Sally or Sarah. And for the life of me, I cannot remember this girl's name because she really wasn't a key player. But she goes in and she asks them, hey, has anyone seen Pat? And the other girls were like, oh, she might be with Martha or whoever. She mm-hmm. might be down the hall. They go to Martha and they're like, hey, have you seen Pat? And she's like, oh, she might be with Kim. And then they go, you know, so they did this whole like round robin thing where they were looking for her. Now, her friend knew something wasn't right because this was very, very, very out of character for Pat. She was a rule follower. I mean, she even thought she was rebelling when they went for that walk, you know. So to be late for curfew was the first red flag that just sent alarm bells going off.
Yeah.
It would not send my friends alarm bells. They'd be like, well, she'll show up eventually.
Oh, I'm crying.
So, yeah. The next day, when the couple still were not home, their friend knew that the couple had gone parking. And, you know, phone calls began to, like, be made. And people were like, hey, did Pat and Jesse come home by chance? Because, remember, Jesse wasn't supposed to be up there. He was going to return the car. So then some people figured, oh, Pat just went ahead and left with Jesse and they went to Jesse's home. Or Pat ended up getting dropped off at her home. Or they, you know, and then ultimately some people were like, oh, well, they just finally ran off and got married.
Okay.
But there were so many theories going around at the time. And when they missed curfew, they were like, they wouldn't go get married. They just got permission to get married. Mm-hmm. Why would they need to run away to do that when they had just gotten the blessing in like a few months?
That makes sense.
So the roommate that knew where the couple went parking decided to load up some nurse friends and head down there because the police were not helping and no one knew what to do. And she was like, well, I know that they went here, so let's just go check it out. So she loaded up some nurse friends and they got there and they found Jesse's car.
Mm.
The vehicles at the time in the 70s had those like triangular windows that could be like popped in and out.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like doing the motion with my hand. So if you're listening to this, you can't see what I'm doing, but it was like the ones that you could push them in or pull mm-hmm. them out.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So one of the girls that was there, she just literally kind of like pushed it in and unlocked the car.
Okay.
Because the car was locked. And when they unlocked the car, reports say that the car contained personal belongings such as Jesse's jacket. And then they found some pantyhose that were folded up and placed under the seat. And they saw the wallets and the purses. And they just saw like everything that they had on them was mm-hmm. still in the vehicle.
Yeah.
But there was no sign of Jesse or Pat. They also could not find any fingerprints in the car once the police did decide that this was an issue.
Okay.
So this is the 70s, and I bring up fingerprints because obviously DNA is not a thing at this time. But ultimately, the goal at this point was to find Jesse and Pat. So word began to spread around about the couple missing, but unfortunately, the police were interested.
Why?
Well, they tried convincing the family and friends that the couple had probably run off together to get married, but everyone was like, no, you don't know them. Like, they would not do that.
Mm-hmm.
They also informed family and friends that it had not been 24 hours since they had gone missing, which I've heard many podcasts talk about this whole 24-hour rule. If someone is freaking missing, I don't care how long it's been. Please just go and find them.
Yeah, just sounds like laziness to me, honestly.
Yeah, because I feel like, sure, back in the day or at some time period, you know, runaways were a thing, but not everyone is a runaway. And even if they are a runaway, why is a 19-year-old allowed to be a runaway and no one care anymore?
Yeah.
Like, they are still, like, young and mm-hmm. impressionable and can be attacked just like anybody else.
100%.
Go do your job.
Mm-hmm.
So without the help of police, several nursing students band together and began their own search. They called hospitals and checked with Pat's family along with Jesse's family. Tim Horn stated, no one knew at the time that it was homicide, but it became fairly apparent within a day or two that something was not right. It actually would end up taking 12 days before any news came to light. On February 25th, 1971, Jesse and Pat's bodies were discovered 3 miles away from their last known spot at Wayside Place.
Oh.
So Captain Tim Horn said the following about this discovery. I've never had a case quite like this one, and I've been in investigations for over 21 years. He later went on to describe the scene, saying, they were found by a surveyor that was doing some work in a wooded area. It's part of now what's Duck Forest. At the time, it was privately owned land, and he was doing some surveying in that area, and he came upon the bodies that were partially covered by leaves and some other debris. I want to add that the couple, when they were found, were also found tied to a tree, one on each side with their backs against the tree.
Mm.
They had thick knots around their heads and hands. The surveyor originally didn't know what he had come across and thought what he saw was a mannequin leg sticking out, but it turned out to be the leg of Patricia Mann.
Dang.
Horn added later saying, it looks like they were strangled, then let down, strangled, and then let down over a long period of time to the point where their shoes still had mud on them and they were little troves where their feet had been thrashing around.
Oh.
So basically, he would pull the rope tight, strangle Jesse, and then right when Jesse would be unconscious, he would let Jesse regain his breath, then strangle Patricia, and then strangle Jesse, and then strangle Patricia, and then strangle Jesse.
So this has to be somebody really strong.
Mm-hmm. Because keep in mind, Jesse's 6'2".
Yeah, so.
He's a big boy. I need a big boy. A big boy. Give me a big boy. He was a very big boy.
Yes. But, yeah. So the person definitely had to be strong. I would assume it's a male. I mean, unless you just.
A really strong female.
Really brolic.
Brolic.
Really brolic. Like. Like bodybuilder brolic.
Killer Sally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm. But to do that is also like indicates like high levels of torture. Like this wasn't just about killing them. This was about torture.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
You know?
You wanted to prolong mm-hmm. the process.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
There were also zero signs of theft or robbery because Jesse was still wearing his watch and his class ring, and Pat still was wearing her quote-unquote engagement ring that Jesse had given her.
Mm.
So both were not robbed, so this was not a motive of, I want your valuables. This was pure torture and murder.
Yeah, and all their stuff was still in the car, mm-hmm. too. So I'm assuming he got them from there and then just drug them into the yes. forest or something. Something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
That's, yeah.
So there was also no sign of sexual assault, but Pat did have signs of internal injury where they assumed that she was punched, kicked, or stomped upon.
Mm.
Reports also mentioned that along with being strangled, the couple was stabbed several times, but I could only find that in a few sources because the cause of death was asphyxiation.
Okay.
So they died ultimately from being strangled.
Okay.
It was also suspected that the couple was forced from their vehicle, like you just said, mm-hmm. Ashley, and put into the trunk of another car. They were brought to this location and ultimately found at that location. Now, the crime scene photos, even 47 years later, are very disturbing beyond belief. And what really stood out to them when Horn actually found this case, and I'm going to get to that in a minute, was that they were in black and white. So these photos were still like in black and white, and Horn got this case in like 2011. So he was like very intrigued by this case. Horn even added to this brutal attack saying, quote, so a certain degree of planning, absolutely, and there's a strong possibility, and we do believe that the suspect knew the victims. To what level, to what degree, that's still undetermined.
Why would he assume that?
Because of the overkill.
Oh.
You know how they have like the profiles of like if you stab somebody in the genitalias and you have daddy or mommy issues.
Oh,
and
yeah,
if
you, yeah, yeah.
You know, different signs of like torture mean different things. And he just said that they believe through a profiler, which they did have once upon a time, analyze this case,
mm-hmm.
that he knew one of the victims.
Okay.
So I listened to this podcast and I'm still listening to it. I listened to it on the plane and I was actually just intrigued by this podcast in general. But the podcast is called The Longest Dance, and I will mention more of that in just a second. And they do a deep dive into this case. And it broke my heart that Pat's mother, okay, so Carolyn is Pat's cousin. Remember, they were like sisters. They mm-hmm. were super close.
Yeah.
And Carolyn got a phone call when she was cooking dinner for her family. And she said that she was very used to these phone calls, like 12 days into the search, they had not been found. And so a lot of people would call and they would say, well, I heard that it was the Zodiac killer. Granted, it wasn't. But they would like have all these random theories. Mm-hmm. And Carolyn said, like, I became numb to all these theories because people would just call our house and just keep bringing up this trauma that we mm-hmm. were trying to like heal from.
Mm-hmm.
And she was cooking dinner and she got a phone call and it said, were the bodies that were just found that of Jesse and Pat? And she said, I don't know what you're talking about. And at that time, she said her mother had pulled into the driveway and was running to her aunt's house, who was Pat's mom. And Pat's mom had to learn from the media, that her daughter's body had been discovered. The police did not even come and do like a,
wow.
What do you call it, a sympathy courtesy call.
I don't mean, know like, what it's called, but I know what you I know what she's talking about, but I don't know what the name of it is. But I,
right.
Yeah.
But so the media informed Pat's mother that her body had been found.
Wow.
That, I don't know. That just broke my heart to a level, a different level of degree.
Mm-hmm.
So the news was spreading like wildfire, and students were beginning to not feel so safe at Watts College. This was the 70s, and serial killers were just starting to become public knowledge. The Manson case, along with the Zodiac Killer, was just now hitting mainstream media.
Oh, okay.
To say fear was running rapidly was definitely an understatement. So the nurses even talked about how their dorms and the hospital itself had underground tunnels that they would walk to class through. Like, so they would just go underground and they would be at the hospital.
I don't like that.
We don't like that in 2023, but they didn't see a problem with it.
Oh, that just sounds scary to me.
It does, but they stopped using those tunnels when this happened because they got freaked out.
Yeah.
So what they didn't have was communications with the Departments of Justice. I mean, this case like had everyone involved. They had the FBI, the SBI, the DMV, the local investigators, the local police officers. They actually had two counties involved because where Patricia and Jesse were found was on a county line.
So what's...
What is SBI?
Yeah.
It is the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation.
Oh.
So not a local, but a state branch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does every state have that?
Yes.
So there's a DSBI?
Well, is that your state?
Delaware?
Yeah.
Oh.
State Bureau of Investigation.
Oh. Okay.
And y'all would have a Delaware branch.
That's cool.
And that's like if your county police couldn't get it done, they could call the State Bureau. The State Bureau can't get it done because the State Bureau is going to have more resources than your local bureau, obviously.
Yeah.
And if they can't get it done, then they go to FBI.
Oh.
I think it just works up chain of command.
Okay.
Yeah.
The more you know.
Yeah. So even with all these resources, they still couldn't get the job done. And this is because in the 70s, and think about Ted Bundy. And Ted Bundy wasn't like, you know, during this, like right here in this time period, but like he was very close. And the reason Ted Bundy was doing what he was doing and getting away with it is because he was hopping state lines. And remember, they didn't share information state to state, which ultimately allowed Bundy to get away with it for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with like local investigations. Every bureau and every department thinks that they're the best and they know everything and they're going to get this job done. And so what was happening was they were not sharing information.
Mm-hmm.
So like the FBI was doing their own investigation, and what they would find, they wouldn't turn around and share it with the SBI. And then the SBI was doing their own investigation, and they wouldn't turn around and share it with the local police. And then the local police was doing their investigation. So no one was sharing information. Yeah. Why? I mean, why do you want to act like that? I don't really know, but that's what was happening.
Okay.
So this ultimately resulted in them not putting all the pieces together until like years later.
Wow.
So it was actually Tim Horn and another officer, Don, that were the first to ever see all the evidence collected under one roof in one sequence of events. Horn said the following about the situation. Everybody individually worked on the case. It didn't catch a whole lot of traction. There was a lot of work done, but it was individual. Not a lot of information was being shared by various agencies, so there were some missed opportunities. There were a ton of initial suspects that were developed, but in talking with some of the retired detectives, as well as looking at the paperwork, it was clear that the overwhelming majority of these suspects weren't realistic. It was also thought that the person responsible for this tragedy was someone from the area, because the area and where the couple were actually found was so secluded and it was on private land that you wouldn't just happen upon that area.
Like you had to know
about it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Horn said this about the land in which the victims were found. He said the suspect knew this area. He knew this location. And it's our opinion that this wasn't the first time he came down here. He felt comfortable enough that no one was going to come and that no one could hear him or them cry, scream, and plead or what have you.
Wow.
This case went cold after years of no leads. And then in 2010, 2011 is when Captain Horn kind of found the case.
Okay.
So up to that point, it became a box on a shelf. and no one was really doing anything about it. I mean, they would maybe read it here and there, but it just ultimately got declared a cold case.
Yeah.
So Captain Horn found a discarded box of evidence when he was at the old jail for potential renovations. Out of dozens of cardboard boxes in rows, there was a box sitting on the floor by itself with the lid off. When Horn went to place the lid back on the box, he saw the crime scene photos and was drawn in like a moth to a flame. He read the file like it was a Stephen King horror book and was so enthralled with the mystery. It was around this exact same time that the cousin of Patricia Mann, Carolyn, had called for her routine update on the case. Determined not to let this case die and to get justice for Pat and Jesse, Carolyn would call, and she finally said she got to a point where she was like, I'm done with all these psychics and random calls and random spottings and random theories. I want answers. Mm-hmm. And when she called, she got Tim Horn. And it was literally within like 3 weeks of him finding that box.
Wow.
It was like the moons crossed with the sun and it went in the microwave and it popped.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. With the new discovery of the box and the contacting other agencies for all the collected evidence that they had, Horn and Don asked the sheriff to declare the case be reopened. It did not take long to convince him, and the case was ultimately reopened. This was tricky, though, because there wasn't any new evidence that they were relying on. They were just more or less going to go back and read through old photos and files and see maybe what had missed, what they had missed. There were promising suspects throughout the years, but some were cleared and some were not. So who did the podcast I mentioned earlier believe was the main suspect through their own investigation? So there's a podcast that did a deep dive into this case, and I briefly mentioned them earlier, and it was produced by Eric Pruitt and Drew Adamack, and it's called The Long Dance, and it contains 8 episodes each, and they are about an hour long. And I am currently listening to them right now, like I'm finishing them up. And I didn't find them because like of this case, but like I really have been interested in podcasts lately that are one case. Mm-hmm. So I've been like listening to them, and then ultimately we wanted to do a Valentine's case, and I found this case, and then I found them, and it's a whole thing now.
Okay.
But it's a really, really good podcast. And it was released on June 30th, 2018. And the producers of the podcast lived in Durham. And they became intrigued with the case because they lived in the area. They saw where Patricia and Jesse would hang out. And they saw where they used to go and eat. And they, you know these people. Like, obviously, it's been years. It's been 47 years. But they are still feeling the aftermath of what happened to them.
Yeah.
So they do an amazing job of covering this case, and they're the only podcast that has actually sat down with the person who is believed to be the murderer.
Wait, what? Mm-hmm. Why would they do that?
Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
So I do encourage you to listen to this case if this is still hugging at your heartstrings on this Valentine's Day. And the producers of The Longest Dance, not The Longest, The Long Dance, worked with Captain Horn for almost 20 months. And although no arrest was made, I've mentioned that they do have several theories of what happened. And Pruitt states the following: we did our own level of investigation. We arrived at one conclusion, one suspect that we thought stood out that had never been identified. Horn followed suit on this theory, and he did agree as well. And through this podcast, the investigation has gone further than it ever did. Mm. And Horn added that, like, I think we've seen it as podcasts have been taking off, but like people are more comfortable talking to journalists than two police officers arriving at your door.
Yeah.
You know, so Horn saw the benefits of this social media era coming about, and he honed in on it, and he was like, let's do this because they're more likely to talk to you than they are me. So they disclosed that the suspect is a doctor at Watts Hospital.
Mm, that's where the party was at.
Yep. The same hospital Patricia worked at the time of the murders. They believe he knew Pat, and the suspect is still alive today, although he is 80 years old.
Mm.
His name has still not been released to the press. The podcast actually spoke to the suspect, and although Pruitt believes in the justice system, he did say the following about the person. I've never been in a room with somebody like that. Time will tell guilt, innocence, etc. But this was a cold person. Could you imagine just being like, I know what you did, but like, I know you're not going to admit it. Now we just have to sit here and stare at each other and do an interview.
That is so weird.
Granted, they do say that you like walk by like 3 murderers in your lifetime.
Yeah.
Like just out here at Starbucks getting their venti latte.
And you a murderer.
Yep.
You a killer.
Yep.
You got somebody in your trunk right now.
Yes, you do.
Mm-hmm. In your basement. Mm-hmm. Tied up.
I'm telling them.
People crazy.
Yeah. The mystery person still remains at the top of the persons of interest list. And Horn has stated that investigators have spoken to this mystery man and asked for a sample of DNA. His attorneys were very quick to reply to the request, stating that their client would not be giving a DNA sample.
That sounds really suspicious.
Granted, when he committed these murders, if he did it allegedly, then he didn't know about DNA at the time, right? Because that's the 70s. So
true.
He knew to wipe down fingerprints.
True.
But now that DNA has come about, you know.
True. Mm-hmm.
The doctor repeatedly refused to cooperate in any fashion with the police and investigators. Horn said in regards to his age and this case still being cold but ongoing, quote, there's a race between us trying to solve the case and bring someone to justice. And if it ends up being this particular suspect, I don't know how many years he has left.
I'm guessing in the podcast they go into detail as to why they think that mm-hmm. he is the man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They do. I don't have enough time on our podcast for that, but that's why I'm telling you guys about it. I'm not going to ever gatekeep a good podcast from you guys.
Yeah.
It's a great podcast.
Okay.
And they do go into that. And one theory I am going to bring up, though, as to why they think it's him. The podcast also uncovered a new piece of a hearsay story turned truth. While conducting interviews and listening to rumors, they uncovered a story about a second attack that took place in the 1970s. There was no record of this attack at all, but once the podcast was released, an FBI agent came forward to confirm this event actually took place, and better than that, they survived. And they're still alive.
Oh.
This could not be ignored because after reading the report, the similarities were eerie. The second attack took place in Duck Forest.
That's the forest!
Which I mentioned earlier. The couple, a male and female, were abducted at gunpoint by a male suspect. He attempted to place the couple in his vehicle. The couple fought back and did get away, but it was reported that the male victim was pistol whipped and suffered nerve damage.
Damn.
Both victims were contacted and they worked with police on creating a sketch that looks very similar to the top of the suspect list.
Damn.
Mm-hmm. And remember, Horn said this was probably not the first time something like this has happened. Like, mm-hmm. they thought this might be someone who had done this before.
And then if he a doctor, like, he know how to like do certain things, uh-huh. like that's sketch.
Mm-hmm.
That is really sketch.
But recently, there was hope in a break in this case. So as we know, DNA was not around in the 70s, but it is a thing now in the 21st century. And they have this thing called an MVAC. And an MVAC is a wet vacuum DNA collection system that was originally made for food. It would like vacuum out certain particles and foods and things like that.
Okay.
But basically, the NVAC can extract DNA from difficult places. These places are places that you cannot normally get to, such as knots that bound the couple together.
Oh.
So Horn made sure to preserve the rope. He liquefied it. I don't really know what all goes into liquefying
mm-hmm.
evidence, but that's mm-hmm. the word he used. And because he took such good care of it, he was hoping that the MVAC could come in and extract in certain spots of the rope and find DNA. So only 80 MVAC machines exist in the world, and only 40 of those are in the United States.
Okay.
However, as promising as this sounded, it was still not enough. And disappointment once again swept the Justice Department. The EMVAC machine was unable to gather enough DNA to match it to an individual. But Horn said the following, quote, "We were able to glean some information, but there wasn't enough genetic material for them to make a comparison." Horn added, giving this quote, "I very much want to be able to solve this case for them and for the victims. The victims obviously didn't deserve what occurred, and whoever did this horrible crime needs to be held accountable." Horn was set to retire in 2018 when the podcast was released, and from all my research, he has done so, and this was the first time that a Horn had not been in the police department in Orange County in 56 years.
Mm.
No, 64. Sorry, got my numbers backwards. 64 years.
Mm.
So the Horn family is very well decorated in Orange County.
Okay.
The case is still unsolved, but Captain Horn said that he would not stop working on this case even in retirement.
Okay.
And he does say that anyone with information about the murders of Jesse McBain and Patricia Mann should call the Orange County Sheriff's Office at 919-644-3050. This family does deserve justice.
100%. I mean, hopefully that man just, here's the thing. You 80.
You're 80.
Okay. Just admit it. Go to jail a couple of years and die. You know what I mean? Yeah.
I think he'll wait until he's on his deathbed.
Probably.
And be like, peace out.
So maybe we just, get him there quicker.
Yeah.
Inject him with something. Be like, sir, you about to die. What you got to say?
Put the mic in his face. Yeah.
But
I mean, if you did do it, you got to live your whole life with this.
100%. What are you really doing at 80? What?
Correct.
You still working?
Absolutely. They say that they know his whereabouts now and that they, quote unquote, they have an eye on him.
And also, it's just you're not providing your DNA. You're not cooperating.
Yeah.
You look hella suspicious.
You do. And the long dance does have more information on the why. I just wanted to give you the one that stood out to me about the sketch matching. This couple does not work at Watts Hospital that was attacked. They were just hanging out in Duck Forest and they did not know this man. And it's a coincidental. Is it a coincidence that their sketch years later matches what you looked like in the 70s?
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially when your name has never been released to the press. So they couldn't have Googled you.
Yeah. Well,
Google wasn't even around. But they couldn't have known about you. They didn't see you on the television. Because you were never released to the press.
Yeah.
So how can you argue that that's not you when a random couple
that you
described
attacked
you to a T?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I hope he get what coming to him.
Mm-hmm.
Old man Withers.
With your wrinkles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what are those spots called that you get when you get old?
The brown spots.
Yep. Oh. They call something. I don't know. But I know you got them. I know you do.
In your spider veins.
Mm-hmm. I know you do.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in your hunchback.
Yep.
Can't even walk.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wipe your butt.
I hope that you try and eat Jell-O and it falls off your spoon every time. You and it fall over every time. Damn it.
Yeah. I just want Jell-O.
Mm-hmm. That's what I imagine for you.
Mm-hmm. That's what we wish. We wish it now.
Ahora.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the Valentine's Day murders, the murders of Jesse McBain and Patricia Mann.
Oh, wow. Well,
we hope we didn't ruin your Valentine's.
I don't think we did.
Yeah. They know what they come here for.
Mm-hmm. And it's not for sunshine and rainbows. No. It's for murder.
Yeah.
And that we did.
Yes.
Well, we got two more episodes to record today. One down, two to go. So we're just going to do what we normally do so we can roll into that. So like always, the bell don't dismiss you.
We do.
So we'll see you next time, but we're going to start recording probably in an hour. So bye.
Bye.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.